भागवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 35, The Gopis Sing of Krishna. Texts number 6 and 7. What have we got written up there? 6 and 7. We'll just chant 6, I think. Just for practicality's sake. Bahina stampaka dhatu palasair. Paddamalla pari bahavitambaha. Kahichitsabala alisa gopair. Samavyati Yatra Mukundaha Bahina Stabaka Dhatu Palasair Baddamalla Padi Bahavidambaha Kahichit Sabala Alisa Gopair Gaha samavyati yatra mukundaha Bahi. Sometimes Mukunda imitates the appearance of a wrestler by decorating himself with leaves, peacock feathers and coloured minerals. Then in the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, he plays his flute to call the cows. At that time, the rivers stop flowing, their water stunned by the ecstasy they feel as they eagerly wait for the wind to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. But, like us, the rivers are not very pious, and thus they merely wait with their arms trembling out of love. Purport. The gopis state here that the sound of Krishna's flute causes even inanimate objects, like rivers, to become conscious and then stunned in ecstasy. Just as the gopis could not always be in Krishna's physical association, the rivers could not come to the Lord's lotus feet. Although they desired the Lord, their movement was checked by ecstasy, and their arms, their waves, trembled with love of Godhead. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yad Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam. So this is a very interesting section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which acts as a counterpoint to the previous chapter, wherein the gopis were associating with Krishna. It's described in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary to this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam that this chapter is made up of 12 sets of 2 verses each, wherein which the gopis are describing Krishna's characteristics, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's personality, and certainly describing their or revealing their intimate relationship with Krishna in these feelings of separation. In fact, these feelings of separation of the gopis are considered to be the highest transcendental mood of service to the Lord. As is explained, that the gopis mention here that just as the waves of the river become, and they're described here as their Buja means arms. So the waves are described as the arms of the river. Just as the waves of the river become solid. So similarly also the tears of the gopis also become solid. They dry up. When in their feeling separation from Krishna, they actually feel as if Krishna is present. And so they become jubilant. Right? At the moment they're feeling so hurt and so crestfallen and so separated from Krishna. They're feeling so depressed, basically. They've been... Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur describes how the association of the gopis with Krishna has its light side and its dark side, or its cooling side and its heating side. Right? So the cooling is the night, is the night time. So at night, when the gopis are associating with Krishna, then they're feeling the coolness and the satisfaction and the relief of the association with their beloved. Right? So that's very pleasant, very pleasing. But then there's the heat of the daytime when the sun is shining, and then there's the burning of the fire of separation, which they feel to be very if you like, unpleasant. In one sense, unpleasant. The separation of the lover from the beloved is an unpleasant feeling, Prabhupada explains, or we were discussing before, just like a person who has a poor man who has made some money, but then he's lost it again. You make some money, then you lose it, and you feel, oh no, I worked so hard, I got what I wanted, and now I've lost it. Like that. Something like that. Very hard, actually, to appreciate the depth of the gopis' love for Krishna. They're feeling separation. And in that separation, they're crying. And lamenting their loss, their bereavement. But in the ecstasy of feeling their separation from Krishna, sometimes they feel as if, no, now Krishna's coming. This is the power of Vipralamba Seva, actually, is that even though one is in separation from Krishna, the depths of meditation and feeling for the Lord alleviates the pain and the suffering of the separation, so that they feel like they're actually with Krishna. So the gopis are describing here what happens when they're stuck at home. They're trapped by their families, by their husbands, by their children, you know, by their dharmic principles, by their chastity. This is why they complain to Krishna, "You're breaking down my vows of chastity." It's described that Krishna's flute is, so Krishna's flute is his messenger. And with his flute, he communicates with everybody in Vrindavan, especially with Srimati Radharani. And Radharani complains, "You're so expert at playing your flute, you're able to destroy my chastity." Of course, actually, Radharani is always chaste to Krishna, but she's "You're destroying my relationship with my husband." It's interesting, I don't know if Keshava mentioned it the other day, but the potency of Krishna's flute, so powerful that the demigods who are travelling in their viman, in their spaceships, if you like, not tin cans like Major Tom, but viman that are transcendentally powerful, in that they can carry the demigods pretty much at will to whichever place they want to go, and they can almost be there instantaneously. This is the potency of their. So the demigods, wives of the demigods, are hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, and their hearts are being filled with amorous inclinations towards Krishna. And so much so that their clothes are loosening and they're losing their decorum. But the funny thing is, the demigods, the men, they're also feeling the same feelings. Right? So they're also attracted to Krishna. And they want to give up their male forms and become gopis. Right? The demigod women want to join with the gopis in the rasa dance, and the demigods also want to become gopis as well. And so the demigod women are thinking, "Oh no, my husband's going to be worried about me and my chastity." And the demigods themselves, they're thinking, "Oh, our wives are going to be wondering about us. We want to become women." This is the potency of Krishna's flute. The power of Krishna's flute is that all of the living entities are attracted to Krishna. This is amazing. In one sense, we're very fortunate, because in this section of the Bhagavatam, we are given a glimpse into the very, very intimate dealings of love and affection between Krishna and his devotees. You know, this is the pinnacle, if you like, of devotion. It's the pinnacle of yoga practice. It's the pinnacle of the culture of knowledge. But it is a very, it's not knowledge in one sense in the way that we're sort of trained or taught to accept it. Because it's people becoming struck by affection wherein they lose all sense of decorum, right? They behave in all sorts of strange and odd ways. In fact, you know, according to most material estimations, some of the descriptions that we hear are impossible. Right? Who ever heard of a river just stopping flowing? Right? You just don't. It's just impossible, right? So from the point of view of cultivation of knowledge, it appears to be somewhat emotional or sentimental. You know, the cultivation of knowledge is done in a serious way, dealing with facts, information that can be verified. Although it is interesting that the beginning of spiritual knowledge is to understand the nature of the soul. And in fact, when we study the Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning gives us this very basic jnana, basic knowledge, sankhya. You know, analyze the material creation, count up all of the elements. This is the cultivation of knowledge. Of course, why are we seeking knowledge? We want to understand the source of everything. We want to understand our connection, our purpose. This is the purpose of cultivating knowledge. But even in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, we hear of the nature of the spirit soul as being beyond the material, immeasurable, right? Immeasurable. There's a quotation that Prabhupada gives of how if you take the tip of a hair and you divide that into 1,000 parts, then you take one of those, was it 100 parts? Different, depends on where you get the sometimes 1,000. Sata is usually meant to be 1,000. Right, then take one of those 1,000 parts and cut that again into 1,000 parts. So, you know, practically speaking, you can't even see it. That's an indication of the size of the soul. And it's interesting, actually. That's our knowledge. That's the basis of our knowledge, the basic understanding of our knowledge. But, of course, for the materialists, you know, you can cut up, you can dissect, you can analyse with a microscope, you can ultrasound it, laser, you know, detect it or whatever, but you still can't find it. Although we know it's there, there's something there. Still they haven't found it. And of course, this is the basic information. We need to understand the basic information. It was interesting, I was reading a statement of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's in the Krishna Samhita that Akendra Prabhu put on his website the other day. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying how the knowledge, the information, the distribution of Krishna consciousness is essential. And that the devotees are prepared to sacrifice their lives. Even the devotees are prepared to sacrifice their own happiness, he says. The devotees don't mind experiencing some inconvenience to bring others to Krishna consciousness, to bring others to a happier state, happier condition. This is the nature of a devotee. Devotee actually doesn't mind putting himself or herself out so that others can come to Krishna. You know, actually, this is Radharani's mood, right? This is the preaching mood. This is Lord Chaitanya's mood, mission. Put ourselves out for the benefit of others. This is real philanthropy, right? Because philanthropy means being self-sacrificing and giving generously so that others can advance. And of course, as Prabhupada points out, merely looking at ameliorating social or material conditions is not real philanthropic work, because it's only temporary. But to solve the real problems of life, we have to give up birth, death, old age and disease. We have to give up these material bodies. So what's the point of looking after material bodies? Better look after the soul. Right? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying, the devotees don't mind experiencing difficulty, helping others realize their original position. That's their business. So he's saying, let the neophyte devotees, let the neophytes come to Krishna consciousness. But then he made an interesting point. He said, let the exalted Madhyam Adhikaris give up their doubts. Give up their doubts. And by the cultivation of knowledge, right? This is the Madhyam Adhikari, it's interesting. And hopefully, well, Prabhupada wanted us to at least move from neophyte to Madhyam. Right? Prabhupada wanted us to become Madhyam Adhikaris. Why Madhyam Adhikari? Because one of the qualifications of a Madhyam Adhikari is that he studies the scripture carefully, scrutinizingly. Actually, Prabhupada, you know, wasn't impressed that the devotees just knew how to distribute his books. You know, here in Melbourne he parodied the book distributor, distributing books on the street. And then Prabhupada took the part of the person buying the book and he said, what's in the book? Then he took the part of the devotee selling the book. No, the book is for you. Just take the book. Then he then took the part of the person buying the book. No, what's in the book? No, the book's for you. So Prabhupada didn't want the devotee. So it's interesting. The duty of a Madhyam Adhikari is to remove the doubts. Remove the... And where do the doubts come from? The doubts come from material attachment. From anattas, unwanted things. So it's actually the duty of a Madhyam Adhikari to study the scripture. And certainly study the beginnings, if you like. The ABCs. You know, for us, the ABCs, you're not this body. Tolerate the comings and goings of the material creation. They're temporary. The material body is just like different brands of motor car. You know, one Prabhupada gives the example. One man's riding a rickshaw, the other man's driving in a Rolls Royce. The rickshaw wallah thinks, yes, I'm on my rickshaw, this is me. It's part of his bodily identification. The man in the Rolls Royce is driving behind the rickshaw wallah, hey, burp, 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 out of the way, I'm a Rolls Royce. Huh? I think it's a novel way of seeing things, just different brands of motor cars. Different bodies are just different vehicles. So we have to rise up above that platform. But Prabhupada makes a point that, and we were discussing this the other day in the Bhakti Shastri class, more than just theoretical understanding, one has to come to the point of practical application, which means we should act on the understanding that we're not the body. And that action means understanding that we're a servant of Krishna. And that's like the bud or the seed of developing our relationship with Krishna. I was listening in a class this morning and Prabhupada was saying, one of the devotees was asking, you know, in Mexico Prabhupada had given a class and Prabhupada said, any questions? And asking the questions about, you know, what body will you get when you go to the spiritual world? And Prabhupada says, your spiritual body is already there. You already have a spiritual form. It is just covered over at the moment. It's just with a temporary covering. And he says that temporary covering is like a diseased person who has a fever. We've got a fever. And he said, but the fever is temporary. We just have to take the medicine that will reduce the temperature. Bring the temperature down. So that we can again regain our spiritual identity. It's already there. As Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is not an imposition. It's not an artificial imposition. It's an uncovering of what already exists. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, let the Madhyam Adhikaris cease their studies of the empirical, not so much the empirical, we shouldn't say empirical, but the gyan, if you like, the basic knowledge, and learn the science of love. It was interesting what he said. Learn the science of love. Bhagavad Gita, in one sense, we have to study the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita doesn't teach us the science of love. The Bhagavad Gita teaches us jnana, karma, and the beginning of bhakti. The beginning of bhakti. And the beginning of bhakti is, what's the beginning of bhakti? Anybody like to suggest what's the beginning of bhakti? Shraddha? Faith? Yes, that's good. What else? What does Rupa Goswami say? What's the first item of the 64 items of devotional service? No. Somebody got it here. Approaching a spiritual master. Yes. What was it? Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshyanti te jnanam jnaninas tatpadashanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. By inquiring from him. How? Submissively. And rendering service. The self-realized souls can reveal knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Interesting. This is how we begin bhakti. And so the basics are given in the Bhagavad Gita. Always think of Krishna. Never forget Krishna. This is also in the next, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But this is primary school. It's important. We shouldn't minimize it. In fact, for most of us, this is what we should be concentrating on. Right? But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is encouraging the Madhyamadikaris, rise above this basics, rise above the basics. In other words, understand the Shastra, understand the scripture, so that one becomes free from doubts. Huh? Otherwise, what happens? When we're always doubting what we're doing, then it's hard to make progress. Am I doing the right thing? Is Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Do the rivers really stop when Krishna plays the flute? Nah, can't be possible. Huh? Are there demigods really flying in their Viman? Whatever. And learn the science of love. Interesting. That's really what... So of course... The Bhagavad Gita brings us to the point of sharanam, right? Surrender. Sarva dhamam parityajya mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshaya syavi ma suchaha. Do not fear. We were reading this the other day. Prabhupada was saying, when you're engaged in the service of the spiritual master, then automatically you're put onto the platform of devotional service. Of course, but there are qualifications. Without doubt, right? With full faith. One has to have full faith without doubts. So this actually Madhyamadikari position, especially studying the Shastra, chanting Hare Krishna for us 16 rounds a day, without offence, right? Well, these are very important, because by engaging in those activities of devotional service, then we get the key to enter into the understanding of some of these more esoteric pastimes of Krishna. Even if we're not very qualified, it's very interesting to read in the Antalila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Ramananda Roy is quizzing Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami is reciting Vidagdha Madhava, was a very intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and wherein you get the description of Krishna playing his flute and the discussions of the residents of Vrindavan about the relationships between Krishna and the devotees. And Rupa Goswami says that he sets the scene, you know, in the rules of writing drama, one has to set the scene. So he sets the scene by saying, the forest of Vrindavan is a stage. And Radha and Krishna are the actors performing on the stage of the Vrindavan forest. And he says, even though these descriptions are coming from me, who am a very fallen, who are very unqualified and fallen personality. Rupa Goswami says, I'm very fallen and unqualified. And so really not fit to speak and to describe these pastimes of Krishna. Just like, you know, well, not that we like Rupa Goswami, but certainly in terms of disqualification, we have the qualification of disqualification. Rupa Goswami definitely wasn't disqualified, but he's presenting himself. I'm a disqualified person. So in one sense, we're disqualified. But he says, the topics of Krishna are so powerful. He says, just like a common man, the labourer, if you like, can light a fire. And with that fire, he then is able to smelt gold. He's able to purify gold. So he says, just as I'm like a coarse man who's able to light a fire, but that fire is so potent because the discussions of Krishna's, the topics of Krishna, and the topics of Krishna themselves are like gold. But the discussions are like the fire. And the fire itself is so powerful that it purifies even gold. So he says, how fortunate we are. How fortunate we are to desire to hear these pastimes of Radha and Krishna performed on the stage of the Vrindavan forest. Anybody who has an attraction for those pastimes of the Lord is greatly fortunate, most fortunate, more fortunate than they could imagine. Because by absorbing themselves in the fire of these discussions, if you like, this is why the Bhagavatam is so important. The Bhagavad Gita leads us up to the point of surrender. Then once we've surrendered to Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam draws us to the ultimate conclusion of devotional service, which is manifest, demonstrated in these pastimes of Krishna with the gopis. So Rupa Goswami says, we're not qualified. Just like a coarse man is not qualified to handle gold, if you like, but still he lights the fire and is then able to be purified by that engagement. We're able to be purified by the engagement of hearing and chanting the topics of Krishna's pastimes. So these are very, this is a very special opportunity. So here we have a description of Krishna dressing like a wrestler. My guess is, this is my meditation, you know, sometimes kids like to dress as Superman. Right. Or, you know, at the moment, the WWF, you know, is popular. So people have their heroes, their wrestling heroes. You know, they're a bunch of showmen, but Wrestling is made up of, it's a show, really. So Krishna also dresses like a wrestler. Right? Actually, Krishna's a cowherd boy. Well, he's not. He's the supreme. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Actually, it's described by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur that he far and above exceeds any of the qualifications of any ordinary wrestler. Right? So the prowess of the wrestlers is defeated by his beauty. But still, you know, as a young boy, he likes to dress as a tough man, the wrestler. Got a peacock feather in his hair. The minerals of the earth, he's painted his face. I guess wrestlers paint themselves up to look pretty mean and nasty. And then, in the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, he's going off into the forest. But then the gopis are hearing the sound of his flute playing, and what do they want to do? They don't want to be stuck at home. They want to run off into the forest and be with Krishna. But they can't. They're bound by social convention. They're bound by the relationships that they have with their husbands and family. So then they're describing, previously they've described how the cows of Vrindavan and the calves and the bulls, they've heard the sound of Krishna's flute and they've just stunned. So much so that the setting in Vrindavan just looks like a painting. Everything is just still. Part of that painting is the river Jamuna has stopped flowing. And her waves are up just a bit like the devotees are dancing. You know, we dance with our hands up. That's what it reminds me of. And, you know, in one sense, why do we have our hands up? We're praying for Krishna's mercy. Krishna, be merciful on us. We're not very qualified devotees. But by chanting your name, we get an opportunity to feel as if we're with you. Right? Sometimes in the kirtan. Have you ever noticed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that there's a description where it describes how when the devotees were having kirtan, then the sound of the holy name fills the whole universe. Right? It's mentioned that. You know, sometimes, I don't know, for me anyway, sometimes when I'm in the kirtan and everybody's chanting very enthusiastically and the kirtan is very loud, then it's almost as if you could hear the kirtan reverberating through the whole of the creation. You ever experienced that? No? We should have more kirtan perhaps more often to get in the mood. Huh? And in that mood, then the devotees, all right, they have their hands up and they're just... This is the beauty of kirtan, actually, because it brings us so... this is why it's one of the main angas of devotional service, because even a casual performance, or certainly a concentrated performance, can help us easily relish the moods of pure devotion. Right? So here the waves of the Jamuna, the waves of the rivers are up, but still stunned. In fact, the interesting thing is, as is mentioned here, that a river is usually not considered animate. It's inanimate, which means unconscious. But in the spiritual realm, everything is conscious. And so the gopis are relating to the Jamuna, oh, she's just like us. The word here, as I mentioned, abahu punya. Abahu punya. Bahu means a lot. Abahu means a little. And punya means pious. So the gopis are saying, the Jamuna is a little pious like us. In that, she wants Krishna's association, but she can't have it. The words here, bhagna gataya. Bhagna means broken. Gataya means going to the destination. Right? In fact, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives a very interesting explanation. He says, the river has been stopped from being chased to her husband. The husband of the river is the ocean. And by Krishna's influence, he's stopping the wife, the river, from associating with her husband, the ocean. Krishna seems to be good at doing this. Bhagna gataya. Broken their destination, broken their arrival at their destination. But also, it can also be taken in another way, they're not able to get to their destination, which is Krishna. Right? The river is not able to get, just like the gopis are saying, we want to be with Krishna, but we're stopped. And so the river also wants to be with Krishna, but is being stopped. But like us, her arms are extended, hoping to just get a minute particle of dust carried by the wind from Krishna's lotus feet. So they're like us. She's like us, expecting the mercy of Krishna, but not able to get it. Of course, as we can understand, this is the Vipralamba, this is the mood of Vipralamba Seva. And in that mood, actually, the devotee is very hopeful. Right? Not despairing. Asabanda means very hopeful of success. Hopeful that they will achieve Krishna. So the river is stunned by the ecstasy. This is the power, the potency of hearing Krishna's flute, extremely powerful. If only we could hear the sound of Krishna. Actually, we can hear the sound of Krishna's flute if we concentrate on chanting the Maha Mantra. Same result. If we do it properly, of course. So the movement of the river is checked by ecstasy, if you like, hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. The gopis, the cows, the demigods. There's a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita which describes Lord Brahma, Bali Maharaj, Ananta Sesh himself. Hears the sound of Krishna's flute and he swirls around. What's that? The great yogis who are fixed in meditation have their meditation disturbed by the sound of Krishna's flute. Very powerful. So even the great, what to speak of, and the gopis say, well, what to speak of us? We're just young girls and we love Krishna. So if they're disturbed by the sound of Krishna's flute, then it must be okay for us, I suppose. So just as the gopis could not always be in Krishna's physical association, the rivers could not come to the Lord's lotus feet. Although they desired the Lord, their movement was checked by ecstasy, and their arms, their waves, trembled, just as the gopis' arms were trembling also from separation. So it's painting a very nice, pleasant picture of Vrindavan and the residents of Vrindavan and their mood of separation. Because in all of this, the cowherd boys are having a great time. Let's go. Let's go and bash up a few demons. Right? They're in ecstasy because they are associating with Krishna. But the gopis, the other residents of Vrindavan, they're feeling great separation. So this is, you know, understanding, relishing and absorbing ourselves in these pastimes of Krishna is a great opportunity. As Rupa Goswami says, even unqualified men can be purified by hearing the topics of Krishna's pastimes. Become purified. But in order to really relish and enter into this science of love of Godhead, one has to first of all free oneself from doubt and attachment, anattas, to really immerse oneself. Otherwise the doubts and the attachments to material things will always remain as obstacles on the path of pure devotional service. And because those doubts and attachments are related to the material concept of life, they will cover, that's part of that fever, if you like, of material existence. They will always cover over our spiritual identity. So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur is, in one sense, blessing the Madhyam Adhikari. Give up your doubts. Give up your studies of, you know, the knowledge of, you know, differentiating matter from spirit, if you like. Free yourself from the doubts. Become, what is it? Be faithful and be determined, basically, to follow the order of the spiritual master. Then one has a chance then to elevate oneself into the science of love, if you like. Nice instructions from the acharyas. And of course, you know, this is the purpose of the Goswamis. And we're following in the footsteps of the Goswamis. Sometimes people say, you know, we shouldn't be discussing all of these elevated topics, it's too advanced for us or whatever. But actually, we are meant to come to this point of understanding. You know, if our philosophy is to understand Krishna in one of the five primary relationships or rasas, right? This is meant to be the purpose, then we should understand these things. Of course, maturely, not prematurely, right? Prematurely, right? This is the meaning of premature. But, the Goswamis were absorbed in the mood of separation from Krishna. Hey Rad, hey Braja Devi Ke Chalalite, hey Nanda Suno Kutaha. Where are you? This is the song of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, right? Hey Radhe. Lalita. Where are you? Nanda Suno. Where's Krishna? Where are you? That's just interesting. Prabhupada makes the point. The Goswamis didn't say, yes, we've got Krishna and we can give him to you, although the spiritual master has, but their mood was, where is Krishna? Is he on Govardhan Hill? Is he somewhere on the bank of the Jamuna? This was the mood of the Goswamis, right? Interesting. Hey Radhe Braja Devi Ke Chalalite, Hey Nanda Suno Kutaha, Sri Govardhana Kalpate, is it? Jamune, Kalindi, Jamune something? I can't remember the... Yeah, Kalindi Vane Kutaha. Which forest? Huh? Kalindi is Jamuna. Are you on the banks of the Jamuna? So their mood was, where is Krishna? In other words, in that mood of separation, following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually. So, in order to understand these topics, then I guess we've got to do the Bhagavad Gita. We've got to understand the Bhagavad Gita inside out. You know, Bhujang Prabhu mentions in his in the introduction to Surrender Unto Me, that Prabhupada wanted the devotees to know the Bhagavad Gita like the Christians know their Bible. Right? In other words, inside out, we should know the Bhagavad Gita. Not only should we know the Bhagavad Gita inside out, but we should put it into practice. Right? Because otherwise, you know, knowing it inside out and sprouting it, but not doing it is, what? Hollow. Huh? Yeah, it's not a good point. It's not knowing it, yes. Not knowing it, actually. Or either that or misunderstanding it. So in one sense, it's interesting, actually, you know, devotional service is not just some theoretical cultivation of knowledge, although there is that aspect is there. In order to, you know, really enter into these pastimes of the residents of Vrindavan, we have to be putting it into practice, basically. Following the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, teaching the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita by example. And, you know, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, like the Goswamis. Certainly that was their mood. And it wasn't that the Goswamis were, you know, dressing like peacocks or gopis and sticking, you know, peacock feathers in their hair and stuff. But rather, actually, when you look at what were they doing? Krishna kirtana gana natana, to be, you know, they were having kirtan. They were studying the scriptures. What for? Dharma samstapako, to establish religious principles. They were preachers, actually. The Goswamis were preachers. So it's interesting. In order to enter into the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna in this day and age, we do that by effectively becoming a preacher. And of course, becoming a preacher means studying the Shastra, putting it into practice, and then, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, working hard to increase the number of devotees. This was the quotation. The devotee doesn't mind sacrificing his own happiness to increase the numbers of devotees. And he says, what happens when you increase the number of devotees? Then automatically the number of demons decreases. So we increase the number of devotees and automatically the demons diminish. Which is what, you know, which is what we want, because the demons create a lot of disturbance in the name of economic development and advancement and so forth. Just to finish off, I was reading there's a Krishna Dharma. There's a devotee in England who regularly speaks on the BBC on a section that they have called Pause for Thought. And he was explaining how he had just survived the summer holidays, because they have their summer holiday. They're just finishing their summer holidays in Europe, in America, and in England. And, you know, that means spending time with your kids. And he said, you know, my idea of having a good time with the kids is going for a walk in the woods, and, you know, appreciating natural environment and discussing topics about Krishna consciousness. But my kids just say, boring. Done that already. Isn't there something else? So I said, you know, unwillingly they dragged me to the amusement park. And he said, you know, my children, despite their exhortations to, you know, participate in a ride on the detonator, or I think there's another one he says called Nemesis, right? Nemesis. So, you know, I'm quite happy to keep my breakfast where it is. Keep your breakfast where it is and maintain your composure. And he said, but the kids are quite happy, you know. He said, after spending 80 quid, now 80 quid is, multiply that almost by 3, and you've got an Aussie dollar. So what's that? 80 quid is about $200. So, you know, $200 just to get into the amusement park. But then he said, and you know, all for what? You know, the thrill is basically to be scared out of your wits. This is the thrill of the amusement park. And he said, so I was thinking about it, and he says, it's a bit like the material world, actually. Because I was just looking at the amount of effort that you require. You get about 90 seconds worth of thrill. And usually that thrill is, you know, you're hurtling face down into the earth, right, with the fear of death. And then, you know, you're brought up to a sudden halt and you're not dead. And that's fun, right? That's the relief of it all. You're still alive. Oh, wow, that was great. He said, you know, you look at the whole thing, it's just a bit like the material world. There's so much energy, so many people working hard to maintain all of this thing, to make sure all of the machines are running safe and securely so that you don't kill yourself, right? You got to pay 80 quid. Then to get that 90 seconds of fun, you have to wait for an hour, stand in line and just wait for an hour. It's just like the material world. You work hard like anything for 90 seconds of enjoyment, and then you're glad that you weren't killed. He said, interesting what he was saying. He says, I think I prefer a quiet stroll in the countryside, chant Hare Krishna, relish the teachings of the Bhagavatam. So, okay, you know, people say it's boring, but it doesn't cost you so much money. Your breakfast stays where it is, and you don't have to endeavour so hard. So we're fortunate, I would say. That's the point he was making. We're fortunate. Devotees are quite fortunate. We have the opportunity to avoid the miseries of material existence, and we have the opportunity to enter into the spiritual realm with Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan. Actually, we are a resident of Vrindavan. We just temporarily got caught up in the joyrides of material existence. Only the thing is, you know, as we've learnt this week, on most occasions you'll be lucky to survive with your life, right? But as we see, you know, with Steve Irwin and now with Peter Brock, oh, they died doing what they loved to do, right? But sometimes, or occasionally, what happens is the joyride turns into reality and then finished. And the reality is another body. That's the reality. As the devotees at Crossways, they had Bhakta Jason, I didn't see it, but went something this effect. You know, they had a picture of Mother Crocodile with baby crocodile holding him up. Baby crocodile said, here I am, a crocodile. So, you know, we're going to get another body. There's no doubt about that. That's just a fact. We'll get another body. But, as Prabhupada points out, we can have a material body, our choice. You know, which would you prefer? Like they say in a game show, you know, the money or the box. With the money, you know what you're going to get. With the box, you don't know. So we have a choice. We can have a body made of Satchidananda in the spiritual realm. That's what we'll get. Or we can go for 8,400,000 copies in the material world. And as it turns out, the possibility of being millions of years away from Krishna, yes, millions of years away from taking birth in the material, in a human form. He would probably say, millions of years away from being a human again. Right? You can be a crocodile, but I'd say crocodile. Well, crocodile's not bad. It's up there. But still a fair way away from human species. So that's our choice. They're the options that we've got, actually. We can choose some more time in the material world or take on the spiritual form. Of course, for a devotee, actually, it's not so. It's still risky. The material world is a risky place, as we can see, you know. Here were these so-called skilled men. Peter Brock was called Peter Perfect. Peter Perfect. Of course, we know in the material world, actually, it's all Peter Imperfect. And as one man made a comment, he said, he'd just flown back from England. The road was wet. He didn't know the conditions. I know how I feel when I fly back from India. You know. I remember once I got back from India and I hopped in the car and tried to get it out of the car park. I was tired, still jet lagged, and I banged it into one of the other cars, broke the headlight and stuff. That's what happens. So, you know, people may call you Peter Perfect, but in the material world everybody is imperfect. So we have to be careful. It's a risky business, and we don't know where we can end up if we're not careful. So we're recommended to be very diligent and careful in cultivating our Krishna consciousness so that we can get our spiritual form rather than a material form. So I might finish here. Guntu Rajshimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.